what we do here.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning and welcome to the June 8th, 2022 morning session of the Court of Appeals. I'm Rico Bishop. I'm pleased to be joined to my right, Chief Judge Mike Pirtle, and to my left, Judge Larry Welch. So we only have two cases this morning. When I call your case, please come on up. Representative for the appellant first, obviously, and then I will repeat the name of the case again because we are live streaming and recording. So if you have any sensitive information, just be mindful of that it is being recorded. All right, thank you. With that, we'll go ahead and start with our first case. In re interest of Jay Oney.
Good morning. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Lauren Wallach. I'm an attorney with the Douglas County Public Defender's Office, and I'm here on behalf of my client, Brianna Wright, the appellant and natural mother in this case. If I may reserve 1 minute for rebuttal, please. I had two assignments of error in my brief. I'd like to begin this morning by focusing on the second one, which was the determination and discussion of best interests. As the court's aware, best interests are presumed to be served by a child having a relationship with his or her parent. This presumption that is only overcome when the state is able to prove a parent unfit. The best interest and parental fitness analysis are separate fact-intensive inquiries. Our position and argument today is that the state failed to meet this burden by providing sufficient evidence to aid the court in making a best interest determination. At our termination hearing, the state called three witnesses to the stand in its case in chief. Two of those witnesses were employees of drug testing companies who testified regarding Ms. Wright's compliance or lack thereof with drug testing in those court orders. The third and primary witness by the state was the case manager, Cheyenne Wilson, who was the case manager for the duration of this case and who worked with this family. While that case manager did have important information regarding Ms. Wright's court orders and overall compliance with those, and the referrals and services pertaining to those court orders, it is our position that that witness was not the appropriate witness to provide the necessary information to the court surrounding the child's specific needs and the best interests. This case manager had specifically testified that she had never observed Ms. Wright and Jasmine together. She had never been on a visit. That's not her role. That is not one of her responsibilities. That would be a service that she contracted out to another agency. During testimony, she did make note that she had received reports from visits and that at one time there was a concern regarding Ms. Wright's ability to control all of her children. When asked a little bit more, Ms. Wilson testified that that concern was also expressed by the visitation company themselves, that the workers there also had struggles controlling all children at one time.
Could I just stop you real quick?
Of course.
What was going on with terminating just as to the one child and not the other two? What was the explanation for that?
I do not believe that there was an explanation on the record. At the time of the termination hearing, there's multiple children on this docket. The state filed the termination as to two of the children. And at the time, the day that we began the first day of our termination proceedings, they had asked to continue the portion as to Jayani, and we're only going to be presenting evidence as to Jasmine. The information, I believe, that was on the testimony of that day that we made on the record was that Jayani's father had recently been identified. So at that time, Jayoni had a different reunification plan than Jasmine did.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Excuse me. As I was stating, with the visitation company, we didn't hear from the visitation company. So we did not hear information as to any behaviors specifically during the visits that could have been concerning. We didn't hear from the foster parent regarding more information regarding these behaviors before and after visits. We did not hear from a teacher or a therapist or anyone who might have some additional insight as to what any potential concerns would be regarding visits or behaviors.
Is it your position that it was inappropriate for the caseworker to provide that information, because there was quite a bit of information in that regard, but it came through the caseworker?
That is my position, yes. I believe that this court has stated time and time again through In Re Aaron D. recently, I believe it was In Re Destiny H., that the best interest analysis needs to require specific information regarding a child, what that child needs, and what that child needs for the future. And also with that the caseworker shouldn't be used as a proxy for any other witness who might have essential information or testimony that could aid the court in making that determination. I understand the role of the caseworker and what information they can have and portray to a court, but I also believe that there's more, I guess, important or direct testimony that could come from individuals that have direct knowledge of this child and her needs that was not presented to this court.
Was COVID a problem in this case, like it had been in Destiny?
It was for a period of time, not for the entirety of the case. There was, I don't have the months off the top of my head, but there was a period of time that our visits switched to virtual visits due to concerns with COVID, as well as issues with getting the evaluations initially completed. But Ms. Wright did complete those evaluations, and eventually the visits did switch from the virtual to back to in-person. I believe it was only about 5 months or so that COVID was really affecting it, but not to the same extent in that case.
Does your client's problem with carrying through with the different court-ordered requirements, like the drug testing and things like that, I understand that that's a look back, but isn't it somewhat also a look forward when we talk about best interest, that she really didn't comply with what she was supposed to do?
I agree with you, Your Honor, that part of the best interest analysis has to be looking at parental fitness, which of course then is looking at compliance with court orders. I think in this case, we have periods of time where there was compliance and then periods of times where there was not compliance or there was a lacking of follow through. But I also think, again, in my argument is that there was just not enough information to discuss what this child needs in terms of looking forward, to make that nexus in terms of what Ms. Wright's, in terms of her compliance with these court orders, how that specifically affected this child and what she needs, I just don't believe was presented to this court.
About the fact that the child seemed to be doing well in her foster placement and that a lot of her physical and or mental health issues seemed to be improving while she was in that foster situation. Is that not something that looks forward?
That is something that generally looks forward. Again, my position would be that information came in from this case manager who was not a therapist or treating individual of this young child. One of the statements made at the termination hearing was also that we're talking about a child who went from 6 years old to 8 years old, who was presumably going from kindergarten to first grade. I think there's also argument that there's times where children can mature or develop absent where they're placed or any effect on an outside source. My position is that the state was asking the court to make a determination that Ms. Wright was unfit and using that as the sole basis to state that she was unable to meet this child's needs without actually providing the court information as to what those specific needs are.
Well, didn't the caseworker provide testimony regarding an affidavit of a visitation worker in monitoring some of the interaction between the mom and the children and how the moods of the children change, how the children ran away from wanting to talk to their mother, hid in the bathroom, were crying? So is that not adequate evidence for the juvenile court to consider in making this decision and for us to consider on review?
I think that, of course, again, that's information for the court to consider. Again, my position is we didn't hear from those visitation workers. We didn't hear from the therapist as to specifically anything that was addressed or needed to be addressed for these children going forward.
Well, they needed a mother who was not addicted to substances, right? That could manage her children by being drug-free. And isn't it problematic that in the month in between the two hearings, she tested positive for meth?
Yes, I believe that that's information that the court needs. And again, that's information that goes to the parental fitness analysis and her ability looking forward to the future. But we still didn't have the information specific to this child. And we didn't have information as to why this child, knowing that there's other children on this docket, as your earlier question, why her needs are any different than her siblings' needs and why her reunification plan was different than her siblings'.
Wasn't the difference that Jasmine's father's rights had been terminated and the other two girls still had fathers that HHS was considering for possible placement?
For possible placement, yet, but their reunification plan, when you look at the court file, still states that it remained one of reunification with a concurrent objective, and the reunification still included with their mother. So when we're looking at termination and it being an absolute last resort, I don't think that the evidence was clear to the court as to, again, why specifically to Jasmine that was necessary at this time. And I realize that there are cases that state there can be differences between one sibling for another, but in those cases, and I'm referencing, I believe, specifically Justin H., they state some specifics of those children and why their needs are separate and why a parent might be able to meet one child's needs and not another. I just don't believe that we had that in this case.
So your position would be that the state failed to meet its clear and convincing evidence burden on the issue of best interest?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I'm going to take her over for a second. This is all about Jasmine's best interest.
Correct.
We all acknowledge that. So back when we have a 247-3A hearing, and there's an acknowledgement by mom that I've got a problem. Mm-hmm. From there, it's all about, can we get her better? Can we get to the point where she can properly parent this child? And we're looking at this record. We've said time and time again, we can't wait forever. Your suggestion is that this record isn't sufficient to show that during that period of time that she improved, that she's demonstrating something that would indicate that there's going to be a reunification in the future. I mean, she was incarcerated twice during this period of time. She's failing these drug tests. She's not showing up. Those things are all in this record. What is there that would suggest to us that it's in Jasmine's best interest to reverse this?
And my position is when we look at the best interest in its entirety, including the specific needs of this child, which also includes other potential permanency objectives. And in my argument, I also think that means why right now? Why is it important right now for this child to sever the parental rights? How would this child at this moment be affected positively or negatively in any way if these rights were terminated? Knowing that we have other children that they're not being terminated for, why was it necessary right now for her for these rights to be terminated? That's my position today, and I don't believe that there was evidence that specifically addressed that question, and I think it needed to be addressed by the court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much should we take, Ms. Wallach, over?
2 minutes and 12 seconds.
Okay. Let's go ahead and add that to Ms. Huber's time, please, if she needs it.
May it please the court, Your Honors, counsel. As this court has stated on multiple occasions, children do not need to be suspended indefinitely in foster care to await parental maturity. At the time of the trial, this minor child had been in the foster home for approximately 18 months. Multiple opportunities were available to the appellant throughout this case. However, she never took advantage of any of those opportunities to correct the conditions that led to her juvenile court involvement. Additionally, she failed to take any of her own self-help measures to alleviate the conditions that caused her children to be placed into foster care. The appellant did complete her court order evaluations. However, those evaluations are merely tools the juvenile court uses to enter other orders in order to rehabilitate the parent. As a result of those evaluations, the court ordered mental health treatment, medication management, residential inpatient treatment, drug testing, and abstaining from the use of illicit substances. During the pendency of this case, the appellant had not complied with the following court orders. She was kicked out of residential treatment. She failed to show up at another residential treatment. She refused to take her psychiatric medications and follow up with her psychiatrist. She refused to do or partially would do drug court order drug testing. By her own admission to the case manager, she was continuing to use substances. She failed to obtain and maintain a legal source of income and a safe and stable housing, which the court had also ordered.
Can you address Ms. Wallach's concern about the fact that three different children are being handled differently? I realize they have different fathers.
Right, and that was, I'm sorry, Your Honors, that was concern of the county attorney's office was that if we severed the relationship between Ms. Wright to all of the children, that those children who could reunify with their fathers would have a source of financial income shut off to them. So they would not be able to go and have Ms. Wright and have any obligation of support for those children that were reunified with their fathers. And Jasmine's father was also terminated at the same time.
And the source of those financial funds would have been what?
Child support enforcement.
From Ms. Wright or from the fathers?
From Ms. Wright. So if we had terminated Ms. Wright's parental rights to the other two children whose fathers were working towards reunification, we would have essentially have cut off a source of funding for those fathers.
I have to tell you that when I first saw this case and reviewed it, it had Destiny H all over it. So how is this different than Destiny?
Well, Your Honor, at this point, this case, this mother has done absolutely nothing to rehabilitate herself.
The mother in Destiny didn't do much to rehabilitate herself. She had failed drug tests, similar types of issues.
Well, Your Honor, in regards to best interests, the court has described in Brooklyn T, this court has described when a parent is unable or unwilling to rehabilitate him or herself within a reasonable time, it's the best interest of the child to require termination of parental rights. We're at 18 months. The mother has done absolutely nothing as far as her court orders. She has not shown ability to be consistent with her children. She had made minimal progress at best. And the child had shown improvement since she'd been in foster care. The case manager testified that when she was first in foster care, the case manager would observe her. She was very adult-like and would parent her younger siblings. She said towards the end, when she had been in foster care for some sort of time, she was more childlike. She didn't have all of that weight on her shoulders to have to parent her kid or her younger siblings.
Is some of this have to do with her mental health issues? And what do we have from a record standpoint with regard to what are her issues? What medication is she supposed to be taking?
That's just the thing. She wouldn't take them. She wouldn't sign releases for information. We don't know what medication. She was not forthcoming with that information with the case manager.
So why not subpoena the witnesses and get them to come in and testify? Why try to get it in just through the case manager?
Well, I didn't feel like I was trying to get in so much stuff with the case manager. Case manager just had a ton of information. She was the only case manager that was on the case for the entire time.
Well, when it's the state's burden to prove both prongs of these cases by clear and convincing, not a preponderance, but by clear and convincing evidence, it just seems to me, and we're talking about termination of parental rights, a permanent termination, it just seems to me that we ought to be dotting the I's and crossing the T's and making sure we've got the best evidence to put before these judges to make this decision. And just like I wrote in Destiny, and I see it again here, I'm not seeing that here. You're doing that to show the statutory basis. And that's fine. We had all kinds of evidence about that. But now here we are looking forward into best interests, and I'm not seeing clear and convincing evidence of best interests.
Well, I think, Your Honor, the past is a great indicator of future behaviors.
But we've said, and the Supreme Court has said, that these are two separate issues.
They are two separate issues, but the Supreme Court has also stated that you can look at the parent's failure and use that towards best interest of the towards terminating the parental right, because the parent, obviously, their fitness goes into the best interest. And I think we have proven that this mother is unfit to parent this minor child. Your Honor, in the instant case, the appellant had 18 months to comply with this court's orders, and for the most part, she did nothing. She does not have safe and state adequate housing. The housing she had was not appropriate for even her to live in. She admitted she didn't even live there. She stayed with her friends. She stayed with relatives. She sometimes lived in her car. She only would allow the case manager into the house two times from March of 2020 till the time of the termination trial in September of 2021. Now, all of the orders that the court had put into place, they were all material conditions that allowed her to rehabilitate herself. However, despite that, she had not ameliorated any of the conditions that brought her before the court. She had not addressed her chemical dependency issues, her mental health issues, or her lack of housing. In fact, she was kicked out of one of her chemical dependency treatment programs for threatening to burn down the facility. This is quite similar to why the case was brought in front of the juvenile court in the first place. She had texted her mother that she wanted to kill one of her children. After that child had been disrespectful to her, the police were called, and this case came in before this court. Housing was also an issue at that time. And in the 18 months of the past, she has made no progress in regards to her housing. In regards to her drug testing, in over a year, she was offered 117 drug tests. She took 14 of them. And of those, she had failed. Your Honors, at this time, the appellee would respectfully ask this court to affirm that the decision of the Douglas County Juvenile Court and uphold the termination of the appellant's parental rights.
Are you aware of other cases where the bulk of the evidence has come in through one witness's testimony, like in this case?
Not right offhand, Your Honor.
In your opinion, can that be problematic from, in our review of the record, if the only evidence is from the caseworker who's relying on affidavits or some records she's looking at?
No, I don't believe so, because the juvenile court relies on those same records to make the same decisions that you're going to be asked to make today. So I don't believe that is problematic, because the case managers, that is their job duty to rely and to talk to and rely on other case professionals in order to make recommendations to the court.
Does it go to whether it's clear and convincing, though?
I believe so. I believe that their reliance and the court found Ms. Wilson's testimony very credible and gave it great weight.
Is it enough just by itself that she continued to not cooperate with the drug testing? And, she did have some negative, right? She did have a handful of negative tests within the course of, from what I could see, it was in the course of a 1 month period before trial was going to start.
Right.
But even then, the last test she had, I believe, indicated meth.
Right.
And then she failed to show when she was requested to come in following that test.
Correct.
Is that by itself, the fact that we have in our record evidence that she was very, very non-compliant with the drug testing, is that enough?
I don't know if it's enough in it by itself, but you also have her housing. It was also a major issue, and that's a big block in order for her to reunify with her children. She can't even have them come to a home. I mean, she can't even do visitations in her home. She can't do anything in her home. So, and she did not appear to be at all motivated to even try to work with a family support worker, which was a service which was offered to her in order to obtain more suitable housing.
Good, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't believe there's any time for rebuttal. Right, all right. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted.